Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk.
Yeah, there we go.
Blah and more blah. Welcome to Tech Talk, everybody. I'm Dave Sparky Saganaki. That's Michael Tech Talk Kassler, the star of the show, former star of the WRLR Dunk Tank.
Oh, yeah. That was a long time ago now. Years ago. I think we're going to say former child star, Michael. I am formerly a child.
Hey, your parents thought you were a star, no doubt.
Know what? Let's not go there. We do have some real legitimate stars on the show, though, today. Dave Saganaki is back from his long trip to Nova Scotia.
Oh, it was great.
Teaching tech to the seals and whales in the Bay of Fundy. And
no, actually, there was some very interesting technology stuff there. Marconi did some of his original experiments up there.
Oh.
And Glace Bay, we visited the site where the towers were erected for the original overseas broadcasts, Morse code broadcasts.
Yeah, that makes
telegraphy.
You know, I bet you I'm sure that I had heard that at some point. Not that I recall now.
And then there was a small radio station I visited up in Cheticamp, just off the Cabot Trail and Cape Breton, a French language community radio station that's actually making itself work financially. So I went there to check out how they do that.
Cool. So you were were you able to expense any of this? I just jammed a splinter deep into my finger here. Freaking out.
There goes the show.
Somebody got to do something about this. Yeah. Oh my God! Yeah. I'm gonna take myself to the hospital. This is awful. Sorry.
Yeah, and there you go. And of course, geeks aren't like that. They don't. They get a splinter and they, you know, pass out. That's good.
It's a major disaster. Well, you know what? And speaking of stars on the show, though, and splinters, we're going to be talking to, well, of course, have Jay Garman on as always. Now, he's insisted that he goes first. He says he doesn't want to follow this next guest. The guest we've got today, we were able to talk to Mark Fraunfelder, who maybe not a household name yet. I don't know. You may have heard of him. You might have seen him. He was on Stephen Colbert. Twice in the last couple of years.
And he's an author.
He is an author. He is the founder of boingboing.net. If you've ever gone there, it's one of the...
Boingboing, B-O-I-N-G?
Lowercase b, capital O-I-N-G, lowercase B-O-I-N-G, boingboing.net. One of the, if not the most visited blogs in the internet. So really neat stuff.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's written a book called Made by Hand. I've got it right here. If you're watching on the cameras on Ustream, you'll be able to see that. And this is Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. I'm really excited about bringing him on. He's in not only a tech, but a DIYer, and we're going to focus on some of the DIY stuff, the do-it-yourself kind of stuff.
Author / internet sensation.
Yeah, absolutely. So good stuff. So stick around for that. This hurts. I can't, at some point we have to run away for a few minutes and just scream in a corner or something.
In your defense, I should say, you jammed it under your fingernail.
Yeah,
that's very nasty.
It's a good thing I've got a soundboard here because I'm cranking up the bass so that you can't hear the squeal, the high trebly squeal that's in my voice right now.
I don't have my Swiss Army knife with me to dig it out for you.
You know what? I've got one in my car. Well, anyways,
you want to throw up automation?
No, it's all right. I'll try to stay focused here. Of course, as always, we've got some very, very interesting tech news stuff that was happening this week. The biggest thing is, of course, you know, everybody loves Apple and everybody hates Apple, and everybody loves their iPhone and everybody hates their iPhone. And the iPhone 4G seems and looks to be no different. Everybody had to be standing in line to grab that first one off of the shelf, and screaming up and down when deliveries were delayed in different areas by some certain amount of time. And
it's just a phone.
I know. And not only that, it's not even a well-constructed phone, it turns out. They had some exciting new construction of the phone so that the antenna would be part of the casing and would increase the strength of it and
the range of it, the ability of it.
Well, it turns out, of course, that when you have these two wires that are working as your GPS and as your standard CDMA antenna, and you take a connector such as your hand, for example, your thumb and your index finger as you would normally hold a phone. Well, that tends to connect a complete a circuit, which leads to attenuation, which therefore means you don't get very good signal strength. So unless you're going to be picking your iPhone 4G up with a pair of mittens or maybe some Teflon coated tongs or something, expect that you need to either hold it very oddly or that you're just not going to get very good reception.
You could bite it. Hold it between your teeth while you talk.
That could make for some interesting conversations. And since it's got that camera on the front of it now, you can people
you can
at least see
of your
the
nose
expression
hairs.
On your face while you do this. So I don't know. You know, Motorola's got a new phone out, the X, something like that, that's coming out. That sounds like what the 4G probably should have been. I don't have enough details on it. I'm hoping that maybe by next week I'll have something interesting to say about that, but that sounded really cool.
PC World got their hands on both of them yesterday and did a side-by-side comparison, and they're pretty evenly matched. Actually, the iPhone kind of edges out the Droid a bit, despite the specs. On paper, it looks like the Droid is much better, but it's, for instance, the Droid has an 8-megapixel camera. But the images were better with the 5-megapixel iPhone camera. One of the nice features that I'm interested in about the Droid is the hotspot. It has a 5-device hotspot integrated into the phone. And then there's another Droid coming out. Sprint is coming out with a Droid similar to this one in a very short time that will have an 8-device hotspot integrated as part of it.
Of course,
that doesn't do us a lot of good up here. I know you live a little closer to civilization. We're a little further out in the exurbs of Chicago. there's not a lot of 4G coverage in this area. That is true.
I would expect that'll be growing. It's amazing to me. Yeah, looking at some of those specs, and it's a 1 gigahertz processor
in the Droid.
And all this and all. Also, too, they actually spent some time making the phone work as a phone, which is kind of unique in this quote unquote smartphone world that you can hear it. They worked on making sure that the volume of it was an acceptable level so you can actually understand what people are saying through it, which is another complaint that people have about the iPhone.
Well, actually, according you can look this up on PC World, by the way. Do PC World. iPhone, Android comparison.
See, at least one of us did some research this morning. I appreciate that, Dave.
I was gonna bring my laptop, but I'm in the midst of this huge file transfer. I didn't want to interrupt it, but the call clarity was rated higher in the San Francisco area for the iPhone. The iPhone was just slightly better. Oh. Yeah, people, the audio quality was better.
Of course, you're now going to start having to pay tiered to AT&T for your bandwidth usage, whereas with Verizon, they're still going to have the all-you-can-eat plans.
Right,
so.
It's 200 gigs. Actually, and that's another thing. Under AT&T anyway, compared to the Verizon pay plan, the iPhone actually comes out a little less expensive as well. However, you do have the 200 gig. Is that right? 200 gig a month limit?
I can't
remember
if it's 200. I think it's originally I was hearing 2 gig.
I can't remember what I remember. It looked like a fair amount on paper. It might have been 20 gig. There was a zero in there definitely, but that doesn't seem like much of a limit, you know. But you know, depending on what you're doing though.
Yeah, yeah. It's Well, you know, this is the thing. This is why I always complain is that, you know, people. Just the here, the eye, you put an eye in front of anything and someone's going to show up there. Well, anyway, you know, the other, we don't have a lot of time here, but the other big tech news that I was going to mention too, there was a couple of things, was that, you know, people, of course, with the staying on the phones, was that, I don't know if you'd heard, but Google now is actually taking advantage of the capability that they have of being able to do something that previously had only been done with Apple phones. Google can wipe apps off of your Android phones as well. Well, remotely, and they just did this recently on two applications that were being put out there and being used, actually probably in a non-malicious way. They were being used by a security researcher who had created these applications, misrepresented why you would want them. They were free, people didn't have to pay for them, and then downloaded them, and he was doing some sort of research on it. Well, Google got wind of this and said, no, you've broken the terms of our agreement as a Google app developer. And so not only are we not going to let you put these up there, but we're going to remove them off of everybody that had them out there too. Which might have came as somewhat of a surprise for some people who didn't realize that. You know, you think it's an open phone and it's not quite so open.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I was going to mention too is the big news all over the web today. If you haven't seen it, go online anywhere and just type in Oscar and you'll run across Oscar the Bionic Cat. Who, poor little Oscar. Oscar was in a terrible accident.
Yeah.
And wound up losing his legs, actually. Now I haven't watched the whole piece of information. I just got the headlines. I don't know if he lost all of his legs. I don't think so. I think he lost like three out of his four legs were either damaged or lost in this horrible accident. And what they were able to do was actually replace those little paws with robotic limbs. So this is now the cat who can still walk even after being in this accident.
Delegged?
Yes. Well, yeah, he was, I guess he was asleep in a field, a cornfield, and a combine harvester ran over.
Oh, it's a sound sleeping cat.
So, yeah, I guess so. So go and check that out. You're going to want to take a look at it. Talk about a DIY project, man. You know, rebuild your cat from the ground up.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, it's amazing. My mother-in-law, she had a cat who wound up needing brain surgery. And you don't think about it with these animals. You're like, brain, who's going to spend the money for brain surgery? And in fact, I remember at one point when she was preparing for a drive up to Madison, because there was a feline neurosurgeon who was well respected up in Madison that she was going to. I told her, and I was only half joking. I said, look, give me the money that you're going to spend to drive up there and buy this, and I'll start buying cats, and we'll just throw away every cat that doesn't remind you exactly of Sam until we find the one that does. I'm willing to bet we'll still have spent half as much as you're going to do.
I think you're too much of a rationalist, Mike.
She didn't buy it.
If we actually had listeners, we'd be getting a ton of email about this.
She didn't go for this. I still think it was a fantastic idea, but somehow it just didn't.
Yeah. If you do a Google search on pet memorials and that sort of thing, there's like tons and tons of people that write very movingly about their pets, and I have pets. I care about them a great deal. I don't know if I'd write pages and pages about how much I care about my pet, but other people do that, and you have to kind of respect that. It's a human trait.
Yeah, no, go on
Google. One of our better traits.
Go on Google and type in animal lovin'. And
animal oven?
Lovin'.
Lovin'. Oh, lovin'. Lovin', yeah.
And, you'll find out about all of our wonderful traits.
You know, as the co-host / stooge of the show, I try to, you know, try my best to back up your positions when I can. And sorry if you if you're saying that people shouldn't spend money taking care of their pets medically.
No. I would never say that. Yeah. I love my little Teddy. I've got Teddy as our dog at home. And, I would.
So where do you draw the line? So your kids know what? How much money? You know. How much money is too much money to spend? Don't we need to call Jay?
We do, actually. On that note, let's give Jay a call.
Let you off the hook there, mate.
I think it's a good idea.
Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Wow.
Good. Thank goodness I don't have to answer that question. Dave was trying to buttonhole me on how much I'd be willing to spend to save my dog if he became mortally ill or wounded, and would that extend to putting robotic limbs onto his severed paws?
You've seen the bionic cat image.
Yes, indeed.
Hi, Jay.
How you doing, Dave?
Good. It's good to talk to you after so long.
It's not true, but thanks for saying so.
It has been a while. It feels like months and months. Dave's Dave's got a glowing Nova Scotia tan.
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Yeah.
Can you see that under a black light? How does that work?
No, they actually had UV warnings up in Nova Scotia. I don't know how that worked, but it's true.
Did they really?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Well, is there no ozone layer in northern Canada? Is that what's going on up there?
I have no idea. I got burnt right away, actually.
I recall paying $8.50 to watch a PowerPoint, something about the loss of an ozone layer. An ex vice president was saying.
Oh, that likes to get massages. That guy, Al Gore.
Yeah. That's the guy. That's the one.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm geeked up and jazzed up about having Mark Frauenfelder coming on in a little bit. I did listen to your advice. We're putting you on first. Yeah, I think Mark would be a tough act to follow. I'm excited about bringing him on and letting I liked watching him on Colbert, but I've decided I'm actually going to let him speak, which Colbert does not tend to let his guests do very often.
Well, Colbert doesn't actually conduct interviews. He conducts verbal ambushes, which occasionally allow the guest to return fire, but not often.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, it's more frustrating than watching Leno, you know? Leno's just a horrible interviewer. I don't know why he's, as successful as he is. He's a funny guy occasionally, but he's just... I never feel I'm always listening to him and I'm like, come on, you know, ask something real or follow up on that lead that the person gave you. You know, he's so into his script that it doesn't ever seem to go anywhere. But.
So you mean he doesn't let his guests speak, much as Jay is sitting silent now?
I'm just waiting for my moment, Dave. It'll come eventually.
I'm not catching your drift.
Yeah.
just think of it this way, Mike. He just compared you to Jay Leno. Taking for the compliment it might possibly have been and move on.
Ouch. Well, you know, I'm ready for some Jay Leno money. I've acquired the skills.
I'd go for a Jay Leno car.
Yeah.
Any of them. Any one of them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
His least valuable car.
Exactly. Or even one of the bikes, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
so do you have a question for Jay?
Jay had a question for us. He
Yes, of course. Yes, he always did.
Yes, he did. Last week, last week I know we it was great. We're continuing a space theme. We had started talking about V'ger and all that good stuff with the information we sent out in outer space, and now we're talking about, of course, the probes that have gone out. There's been three of them. I didn't realize it. What's the name name of the recent Japanese probe again? I'm going to say it wrong if I try to say it.
Hayabusa.
Hayabusa. Are you talking about the asteroid probes? No.
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
Okay.
The question was, what are the only three probes we've ever landed on something besides another planet or our own moon? We've only done it three times. It's really, really hard to do. Now, we've crashed probes into all kinds of crap in our solar system, but actually landing on something that wasn't a planet or our own moon, we've only pulled off three times.
Oh.
And one of those was an accident.
Yeah. And one of the other ones was Hayabusa.
Yes. Hayabusa actually was the accident. The three that have done it are Near Shoemaker, Hayabusa, and the Huygens probe. Near Shoemaker landed on asteroid Eros. Hayabusa landed on 25143 Itokawa, an asteroid. And the Huygens probe landed on the Saturnian moon Titan. And Hayabusa wasn't actually supposed to land. It was supposed to hover just above the surface, lower a sample probe, touch the surface, and then float away again. Only they screwed up the hover part and actually accidentally successfully landed it on Itokawa. And it stayed there for several minutes and operated its little sample probe and then successfully took off again. So that's one of our three successful landings was not intentional.
Yeah. And listening to some of the, since we spoke about it last week, I did a little research on it, and listening or reading some of the efforts that they went through to get this thing there, deal with it when it was landing unintentionally, and then get it back. Half of the engines were missing. I mean, it was incredible. It was like listening to one of the Apollo landings or something, but without the human danger, of course.
Yeah.
But the amount of effort and time and innovation that they went through to try to get this thing back is really quite impressive.
It's unreal. And going back to Near Shoemaker, that landed on asteroid Eros, they intended for it to land. They just didn't expect it to keep working after they landed it. Its whole purpose was to have a slowly degrading orbit and keep doing this gamma spectroscopy on the surface of the asteroid until it got really close, and then eventually it would just skid into the surface and break. Only they landed it soft enough that it worked for like two more weeks after it touched down. And so they literally had point-blank gamma spectrometer on the surface of an asteroid for like 16 days. Which was amazing for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And the Huygens probe, it's its own probe, but it was launched as part of the Cassini. So when Cassini did its flyby of Titan, it just dumped Huygens off. And again, they didn't know if it was going to land on rock or ocean, so they didn't call it a lander, even though it was designed to be capable of landing, because it might have ended in ocean and sank. It did land on land and operated for 90 minutes after it hit down on the moon of Titan. So again, almost, pretty much in every case, our landings have been risky and almost entirely accidental.
Well, you know, at some point though, enough accidents, and we'll figure out how to do it on purpose. You'd think.
Exactly. Now, when I was writing this up, a lot of, you know, I have nerds I talk to about this sort of thing. They all go, "Well, what about the NASA Stardust probe? Didn't it land on a comet?" Actually, no. All Stardust did was get in behind a comet and soak up in this really cool gel pack sort of thing the dust being thrown off by the comet. It didn't land on it.
Hmm.
So, you know, everyone says, well, we landed on a comet. That was really hard. We didn't really land on it. We just sort of got in behind it and sucked up its exhaust.
Yep.
And then do a little sample return thing of the exhaust back to Earth.
Yeah, and I remember reading about that gel stuff. That gel stuff is really cool, actually. It's neat stuff, the way it's designed, and it gave them so much information, not just about the materials that were trapped, but the velocities they were traveling at, and all sorts of really cool things.
Yeah, and if you look at it, it looks like an ice cube tray filled with Jell-O.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the aerogel collectors look like. And it literally just sits out and waits for stuff to hit in these little gel packets and then seals it up and fires it back to Earth, which, I mean, you're talking, that's like basically, all right, I've taken a butterfly, caught it in a net, wrapped it in gauze, put it in a shotgun, and tried to fire it over a river.
And
I mean, it's just unreal, the math involved in this.
Yeah. that, which is why I have a calculator. Oh man, so what should we be thinking about for this next week? Are we gonna keep with the space theme or move off?
Well, we're gonna move off, but not sort of and not entirely. July 4th is next Sunday, so I'm gonna do July 4th themed question because I like to do theme stuff because I'm a dork. And there is one country on Earth that has managed to have 2 4th of July, the date, not the holiday, in the same year. What country did it and how they pulled it off?
Huh. 2 4th of July's in the
same year. Huh.
In this, now, by year, do you mean the same,
in the same
12,
calendar year?
Okay, not in the same 12-month period. In the same actual year. Huh. Interesting. Boy. I'm gonna tip the gag.
Don't tip the gag.
This is for the listeners.
It's not for you.
All right. I was gonna ask for you.
It's well, Jay's gone through all the trouble.
I'm not convinced there are no listeners.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we just proved that by, you know, talking bad about animals.
I said nothing bad about it. I just said that there was an upper limit on their relative value when weighed against the family economy.
Yeah, that's there you
all.
Go.
Yeah. So.
Well, yes, choosing between Skippy's bionic legs and Timmy getting to eat, I'm going to pick Timmy getting to eat.
Uh-oh.
No question.
Yeah.
But what you have to factor in there is how much Timmy's going to cry if you have to put Skippy down.
Yes.
Yeah. So you only get one bionic leg or a lot of fish sticks?
I don't know what's wrong with wheels.
I was just going to say.
Guys think I've got wheels, you know? Why do we got to go with the bionic leg?
They should have evolved them in the first place, and it's only right that we... We make a few corrections and adjustments, I think.
Yeah, or popsicle sticks or something.
Popsicle sticks work as well. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, or just chalk it up to Darwin and say, hey, you know, if you're that sound of a sleeper,
it's only a matter of time. Yeah,
exactly.
Before something else.
Now, when it's going to get creepy is when they start intentionally putting bionic legs on healthy animals to make them run faster in races.
Ooh, I like that.
Or we have the bionic dog tracks.
Bionic frog jump.
Yeah. Well, they've got the Robot Wars thing. You know, it's just one step from that to going to Cyborg Wars. So I can see it.
I'm glad I'm not going
to
live forever.
I'm entirely convinced my daughter, by the time she's an adult, will be able to get action on this kind of thing in Vegas. It's going to happen.
Definitely. I'll be there. I'll be right there with it. Well, Jay, I've got to let you run. As always, thanks for coming on and joining us, and we'll be looking forward to finding out next week who on Earth, what country had 2 4th of July's in the same year.
Absolutely. Take it easy, fellas. Talk to you next week.
All right.
Take care,
Jake.
Great talking to you.
Bye.
I think Jay can follow anybody.
You know. I agree. Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Jay is fantastic. Yeah. Speaking of following anybody, though, in just a minute, we're going to have Mark Fraunfelder on. He's going to follow our spots and bits and blurps and all the other stuff that we got to do here for a minute. We will be right back at you, though. We're Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3. Stay tuned.
See you in a minute.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
Listen to the sounds, the coolest sounds around. On musical memories,
you'll hear your favorite tune.
From noon till 2 o'clock, you'll hear the station rock on musical memories.
On Monday afternoon,
so take a break and linger for just a while at 98.3 on your dials with Alan Berg.
Hi, I'm Julie Foudy. You may remember me as a soccer player, but now my most important role is as a mom. AYSO Soccer is great for helping kids grow because the most development and the most fun happens when everyone plays in all the games. So make sure they play with the American Youth Soccer Organization. Soccer has been such a gift in my life. I hope you give the same wonderful gift to your child.
AYSO Soccer registration will be held Monday, June 28th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Round Lake Library on Hart Road between Fairfield Road and Route 134 in Round Lake, and on Saturday, July 24th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Round Lake Sports Complex on 2000 Municipal Way in Round Lake Beach, right next to the post office. For more information, call 847-546-9428 or visit us on the web at www.ayso.com. 428.org.
Cleaning services at WRLR are provided by Abright Cleaning and Restorations in Mundelein. For over 17 years, Abright has been in business cleaning carpets, upholstery, ducts, and assisting their customers following damage left by flood, mold, or fire. For more information about Abright Cleaning and Restorations, their number is 847-393-7294.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, boy.
What do you get when you cross two musicians, a real late night, and far too many cocktails?
Trick question?
No.
A hangover.
Well, for you, maybe. You get the Sunday stage every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 here on WRLR.
98.3.
There's that kid again.
Oh, that's an interesting show, the Sunday Stage.
I have not caught that one.
It's a sandwich between religious programming, and they're basically kind of musicians that hang around and talk about music. It's kind of a comedy variety show, and they've got church in front and church behind. So,
oh, interesting.
And
that's on Sundays,
9 to 11 a.m.
9 to 11 a.m. So that means that tomorrow morning people can listen to that.
Oh, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to give Mr. Mark Frauenfelder a call here, see if we can get him on air. We're a couple minutes later.
Lord knows you want to do that off the air.
You mean like a real professional type of show? Good morning, Mr. Frauenfelder. Good morning. It's an honor to have you on. You are on air with us on Tech Talk on WRLR. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, you bet. I'm happy to join you too.
Fantastic. Well, hey, you know, I've been trying my level best to give an introduction for you, and probably have not done a great job of it. Maybe you could share with people. You've got a new book out, Made by Hand: Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. Where have you been? There's so much on your resume. How would you sum yourself up?
I guess the shortest version would be I'm an engineer turned journalist, and around 1990 is when I quit my job as an engineer in the disk drive industry and went into self-publishing, published a zine called Boing Boing as a print zine, went to work for Wired magazine as an editor, and Boing Boing turned into a blog, and then I became editor-in-chief of Make magazine, and that's kind of where I got into contact with all these DIYers that were the inspiration for the book that I wrote.
Mm-hmm. And somewhere in there, you wound up in the South Pacific and started doing things which caused Stephen Colbert to tell you that you were an elf. You mentioned though, I want to take us just a little bit out. You mentioned right off the bat, that you had done Boing Boing as a print scene, and then come from that and doing to the DIY stuff. And I gotta say, it occurred to me reading the book and looking at some of the stuff you've done that really you've been involved in DIY pretty much your whole life. You just didn't externalize it and didn't make it about actually making real things for a long time. Do you see it that way, or is that
I do, and I think early on in my 20s I got involved in a couple of home improvement projects that went awry. I had a kitchen floor that I wanted to tile, so I bought the grout, bought the tile, did it myself, laid it all down. It looked great. I was really happy about it, but then a couple of days later, as my wife and I walked across the floor, we kept on hearing these cracking sounds, and I looked, and the tiles were all cracking. And so, I said, "Oh boy, that's not a good thing." And then I tried to do some wallpaper in a spare bedroom that we had. And I just could not get the papers to line up or be, it just was diagonal. It was crazy. And so, so that kind of just turned me off to the whole idea of do-it-yourself. Except for do-it-yourself media, I was really interested in online publishing. And there, when you make a mistake, you can just hit the undo key and you're back to where you started, which was great. So I kind of hid out in that world for a while and avoided doing DIY in the physical world as much as possible. But then when I started editing Make magazine, I came into contact with all these DIYers. And one of the things that I learned about all these people who are super talented in making robots and you know, putting cameras in tights and all these amazing things is that they had overcome their fear of mistakes, and they realized that mistakes are just a necessary part of the creative process and a really good way to learn and challenge themselves. And so that's kind of put a little light bulb in my head and thought, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. And then that's kind of where I started off on the book was, you know, with that attitude, I forged ahead and tried a bunch of different things.
I was curious about that, too. I mean, I'm one of the generation that, you know, grew up eating Luigi for breakfast and Mario for dinner. And the Control Z is an ingrained habit in my mind whenever I do something wrong. And I wondered if it's possible that that has actually given us kind of a sense of fearlessness in a way anyways, that we don't realize that our effects and the things that we do can have a lasting impact or effect around us. We're more willing to take some of those chances because we've grown up in that environment. Do you think that there's a dichotomy between those two, or do you think they kind of, for a certain type of personality anyways, they kind of feed into each other?
Yeah, well, I think for me, I was, you know, part of the educational system where I was taught in school that grades, that mistakes equal bad grades on the report card. So mistakes were something to be avoided. And so, you know, once I started getting rid of that notion, I found that, you know, working on things like building a chicken coop or, you know, keeping bees or making cigar box guitars and those things, that if I made a mistake and I broke a tool or, you know, went off on a wild goose chase, you know, with a project that didn't pan out or, you know, made something wrong, that it was okay. There's no big deal. I can just do it again. And that way you learn how to get things done. The best way to learn is to just do it and get out there and give it a try. So that for me was my approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. You know, and you do spend some of the time in your book as well talking about how we came to be in this sort of mental space as a culture of, you know, what you describe as the throwaway world. You know, the idea that the things that we make are inherently less valuable than those things that we can buy mass produced, which seems really, you know, flipped on its end. It's not the right way to look at it. Is the resurgence of the DIY movement today kind of a reaction to that, or people's, you know, recognizing that in your mind?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, I covered in my book a fellow named Edward Bernays, who was an advertising pioneer in the early 20th century. He also happened to be Sigmund Freud's grandson and used a lot his nephew, and he used a lot of what he learned from Freud to create advertising that appealed to people's subconscious urges and desires, and basically created ad campaigns that made people think that homemade clothing was shameful and food that you made yourself instead of buying packaged food was something that you should avoid. And he helped, promote this idea that anything could be solved, any problem could be solved, or any wish that you had could be fulfilled by purchasing a product of some kind. And, you know, it was extremely effective because our unconscious urges can never be fully satisfied, so people just keep buying and buying and buying. But the truth is, you know, what I learned is when I started making some of my own things, because you invest your time in it and your knowledge, those things that you make have special meaning to you, and you feel more invested in them, and you want to take better care of them. You want to maintain them yourself. You want to make them last. And having that kind of awareness and appreciation of everything around you is really a fulfilling and rewarding way to live, I've discovered.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that keeps people from, and myself included, really, from being more invested in the DIY and more engaged with the things around us is that there's the idea that, you know, if I spend so much time maintaining my car myself instead of bringing it to the shop, building things. Like you have a great story about someone working on a hinge for their garbage can, you know, when you, you could go buy it for you know, $2. That I'm taking that time away from other things that are valuable to me, spending time directly with my family, doing things that would be, quote, you know, air quotes, productive in a more traditional sense. Did you have to resolve that in your mind, or how did you see that that work out?
Yeah, I did have to resolve that, and you know, I had to find a balance of where it was that, you know, the things I was doing was, you know, paying off for myself and my family, and not getting in the way of taking up too much time from my family, or, you know, taking up time from other kind of obligations that I had. You know, one example was when the coyotes started, you know, discovered that we had chickens and started picking off our chickens. I was spending an awful lot of time, you know, trying to fortify the hen house. And, you know, on the day of my daughter's birthday, when we were supposed to go to, you know, her birthday event, I was out there, you know, building this fenced-in enclosure for the chickens, and not really being able to help the family get prepared for that event. And so, you know, there are times when that kind of stuff happens. And so, for me, you know, a lot of the book was about finding that right balance where it added the quality of our life rather than took away from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's something everybody has to figure out what works for them.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess that is, you know, there's one thing too that stood out for me with your book, Made by Hand. A lot of the DIY tracks that I've read, and a lot of the speaking to people that are involved in the DIY movement, really take a much more aggressive stance to the concepts and idea of DIY. They kind of you know, externalize the whole thing and make it a lifestyle that are about things outside of yourself, about the culture of it, about saving the world, about green economy, and all this. You're not proselytizing. You're not evangelizing in your book. You're really just kind of sharing the joy that you had in gaining this sort of engagement. When you wrote the book, was that a conscious choice to not, you know, kind of take that moralistic stance that you hear so often, or did it really just come organically out of what you were experiencing?
Yeah, I didn't want to proselytize or tell people that this is what they should do for one reason or another, because different things work for different people. You know, I do think that anybody could benefit from introducing a little bit of DIY activities in their life, just because of the fun and fulfillment. And, you know, in some cases, it actually is cheaper to do things yourself than to buy them. For example, I started getting into doing fermented foods like yogurt and sauerkraut and kombucha. And making yogurt is something that's so easy that after I started doing it, I was really surprised everybody doesn't do it. You know, you can buy a gallon of milk for $4 and make 16 cups of yogurt. Or, you know, you can buy the cups of yogurt for $1 each. You know, so basically you're getting cups of yogurt for 25 cents instead of $1. And it's so easy. It's brainlessly easy to make. And it's a lot of fun to make and have your own yogurt, too. And then when you make your own food, you really pay attention to the way it tastes. And so, you know, you're more aware of it, and it enhances your experience with doing that. So, you know, that's one simple example that almost anybody could do. And so, you know, people who are extreme about DIY and say that you have to do everything yourself, I think, are kind of missing the point, and it stops becoming fulfilling, and it just becomes kind of a grim quest, which is not something that I'm interested in.
You're certainly not promoting or anything, trying to do subsistence farming. And even though you have numerous examples of people who are doing that kind of thing, the ramshackle family and things like this, but that's kind of where I found it interesting too, is in where I found some special connections to me personally, is I'm just a geek at heart, and kind of applying geek principles to life around you is sort of what I saw you doing as an engineer, applying these kind of geek engineer logic process, thought process, and so on, to the world at large, in the same way that you enjoy, David Allen and GTD is an extremely popular way of self-organization among programmers and engineers. I think for the same reasons, is that it's applicable, and it externalizes something which we've taken such joy in being able to accomplish internally, and with bits and bytes, and doing it with our hands. Did you see that kind of connection happening with yourself? I mean, like I said, I really see the geek in it the whole way through, and I mean that in a very respectful way.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And I'm a big fan of getting things done, and David Allen's work too. And yeah, looking at the physical world as kind of a hackable platform, and having a problem set and going about it and planning on and what you're going to do and your approach and all that is a lot of fun. You set up challenges for yourself, and then you attempt to solve those problems. Sometimes you solve them really well, and sometimes you have setbacks, and sometimes you fail completely and decide if you want to, take a different tack completely or move on to something else. All of those things are tremendously fun for me, and I am continuing to try out different things as I go along.
What are some of those new things that you're trying out? There was a lot of stuff in the book, and it was great. And it's not really a recipe book for people. If they're looking for a DIY recipe book, this isn't it. But it is a fantastic book talking about the process of really becoming more of a DIY, and achieving things. So I've got to believe that you haven't left this behind now that the book's done. What kind of DIY cool stuff have you evolved to? Have you started to take on as new projects now?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm working on now is making amplifiers for my cigar box guitars. And electronics was something that I've just barely dabbled in before, but now I'm getting into more. So soldering circuits and modifying existing circuit schematics that I find online, and seeing if I change resistor values, how the amplifier will sound different. And so that's a lot of fun. I mean, electronics is a huge world that's opening up to me. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And then the other thing I've started doing is the house that we moved into about a year ago, I started planting different kinds of fruit trees on the property with the idea that it would be really great to have an orchard of fruit trees there. And so there's a ton to learn about there too. And it's all really fun to kind of, get into a new field that you don't know anything about and start learning about it, just because it kind of opens up your awareness of the world. And so now, when I visit people's houses where they have fruit trees and stuff, I have questions for them and ask them, what works and what doesn't work. That kind of life where everything becomes more interesting is really a fun way to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing it's great. The picture on the front of the book is you with some of your cigar box guitars, and it occurs to me you must smoke a lot of cigars to keep yourself in those guitars.
Actually, there's a nice little cigar box guitar shop down on the corner near where I live, and so the guy just stacks them up against the wall, and I go down there and he sells them for $3 each. So.
Oh, all right. Well, that's good then. You don't have to
save my lungs. Yeah.
To plow through that. The other thing too is I think you do mention it in the book about
that you know you had to move, and it was just reading those words that you then recently moved or like a year ago moved was painful to me to hear that and to say, oh my gosh, he spent so much time building, you know, and reading the trials and tribulations you had of starting off with killing your yard, you know, building, you know, the mulch alone was just backbreaking labor, and then to say, okay, now you know what, hey, we got to move, I gotta go somewhere else, and we're gonna start over again, you know, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, it was, you know. There were some downsides because you establish systems and things that work out really well, and then you have to start over. But then in another way, it gives you this blank slate where you can, you know, you remember the mistakes you made last time, and you can avoid them the second time around. So there's, you know, there's pluses and minuses to it for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess in a way it, you know, investing that amount of time, we're not only engaged with the things that we make, but then we're engaged with you know, the space we live in too, in a much more real way.
Yeah, and you know, the second house that we moved to was completely different terrain, and the neighborhood was different. The first house, we didn't have to worry about predators, and then the second house was where we started encountering the coyotes and the bobcats and the hawks, and the other critters that viewed our chickens as Big Macs with little tiny legs that couldn't run very fast, and you know, started picking them off. And so, that, you know, that was something. The learning lesson there was that you have to take your environment and situation into account when you do these projects, and decide whether it's worth fighting against the environment or doing something that works with the environment. And so that's why we are not going to keep chickens there anymore, because we can't free range them in on our property. And the free ranging of them was great, because we saw the chickens all the time, and they would follow us around when we walked around. And having to have them penned up, they weren't happy about it, and we weren't happy about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the orchard in that environment does work. And so that's, you know, an example of, you know, working with the environment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mark, I'm going to have to close this off here pretty soon, but I've got to ask the question. You know, the title of the book, Made by Hand: Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. Did you find it? Were you successful in your quest?
Yeah, I definitely found it, and you know, I'm continuing to find it as I, you know, kind of broaden my skills and learning about different things. It's been a great adventure.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I can tell people, honestly, it was a great honor to have you on. The book itself is fantastic, well worth a read, whether you're already a DIYer or just contemplating it, or even just kind of wondering what the heck it is. It just makes for fascinating reading, and it is really a journey. It's a quest and a journey through it, and I think you've whether you feel you were completely successful or not, you certainly made a huge amount of progress and had a lot to learn that you shared with everyone in that. Mark, it was great having you on.
Thank you so much. I really had a great time. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Have a great weekend, Mark. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Anytime. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
And that was Mark Fraunfelder, Made by Hand, founder of Boing Boing, editor-in-chief of Make Magazine, just a really, really impressive guy, really neat stuff. And again, I just want to research. I'm not just saying this because we had him on. The book is fantastic. It's really a great read. It's not the typical kind of thing that I'd pull off the shelves, and I'm really glad that I read it. It really is a good thing.
Sounds like a very interesting book, and he was a very interesting guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, you can find him on better shows than ours too. If you want to look at him but not actually hear him say anything, you can watch Stephen Colbert. But he's also done some other stuff talking about the Made by Hand.
Don't let our guests know that.
Hey,
Hey, you know what? If they're listening,
we're fooling them so far.
We've lost them already. If they're already listening.
Oh, hey, it's getting late, Mike.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know what? I don't even know if we have time, really. I'm gonna.
We could do one.
I'm gonna try. We could do one. Yeah, we could do one. We could do one. If I can bring it up quickly enough, I think we've got time.
Hey, I've got a quick tip. Sync Toy. When's the last time you used Sync Toy? Not like kitchen sink. SYNC Toy. I just broke it out. It still works on Windows 7. It's a fantastic no cost. Option for synchronizing folders.
Absolutely, and not only that, I've got it actually on my machine right here. Not only that, but they Windows now. Microsoft is doing a lot of cool stuff with their new Windows Live business, and they've got Sync is their answer to Dropbox and all that really good stuff to look at. They used to have it under beta. It was called the Live Mesh beta. Yeah. Now they're actually making it real. Good stuff. I will give you one cool site. We've talked a lot in the last few weeks, not that Dave knows this, but we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about
I wasn't listening to Nova Scotia.
I know. Nobody listens.
Spotty Wi-Fi.
No. Australia, I get it. Yeah, nobody listens.
The places we were at, some of them didn't have Wi-Fi.
So Office 2010, if you haven't tried it out, man, some of the best things about it are the new email client that comes with it, and it's connected to LinkedIn and some other stuff. They're going to link it in with Facebook and some of the other social media sites. There's a way to do this, though. Maybe you don't use Outlook. Maybe you're a Gmail guy, and I use Gmail a lot myself, too. Reportive. Rapportive, like rapport, reportive, takes a number of the email clients. I think it works for Thunderbird as well. I've only used it on Gmail myself, but adds that social networking hook in there for you. What that means is that when you pull up an email, like my email from Mark Fraunfelder, I pulled that up, I'm looking at it, and on the right side tab, instead of the ads that you normally get from Google, there's a little image of him from his LinkedIn account, from his Facebook stuff, his most recent Twitter burbs are on there, all this stuff. So you can see who you're emailing and talking with and have different ways of connecting and working with them. And if you're into that, it's a really neat little app to add on. It just plugs right into Firefox and away you go.
Very cool.
So that'll be our one cool side of the week, because we are pushing past the limit. I'm going to leave you with a great, and this one I can actually even do live, so we'll do it not only as the podcast only, but as the real song of the week is going to be Listomania. Oh. Yeah, by it's the Alex Metric remix, and the name of the artist though is Phoenix, and it's Phoenix. a kind of a club thing, you know. Yeah. But I'm into that right now. So hey, thank you so much for listening. Mr. Fraunfelder, Mark Fraunfelder, if you're listening too, thank you so much for being on the show.
And to Jay Garman.
And to Jay Garman, as always, every week. Great to have you on. Stay tuned. You're listening to WRLR 98.3. Right after us is going to be some hits from the 50s, 60s, 70s, something like that. I don't know what's going to be on after this. Actually, Dave is shaking his head. No. There's nothing good on after us.
All the good stuff on WRL has already happened. Thanks to the listeners for listening, and there's going to be great music. Just stay tuned.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take care. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks.
Virginia. The glass for tears grow. Like a ride, oh. Not easily offended. Not hard to let it go. From a mess to the masses. A list of mania. The glass for tears grow. Like a ride, oh. Not easily offended.